You know, for a long, long time, you could not see an elk here in Wisconsin, unless maybe you went to a zoo somewhere. But I'll tell you what, now we have some. And we tried to reintroduce. I don't think we were very successful for a time, but we have been successful. And we now have an elk herd here in Wisconsin that's doing pretty well. And Lane Stoll is an elk biologist, and he's with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, works out of the Service Center in Hayward. Great to have him with us by phone today to talk about the elk herd. Have you seen an elk here in Wisconsin? Where? You live near the Clam Lake Management Zone? How do you feel about the program? And what are your thoughts about increasing the elk herd? Those are some of the issues we're I'll try and take up with Lane and certainly invite your input at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Lane Stoll, are you there?
I'm here.
All right.
Good to be here.
Great to have you with us today. How did you come to work in elk management?
Well, it was kind of serendipity. I worked for the Department of Natural Resources for about 13 years, the elk arrived while I was working down in the Bureau of Wildlife Management as a staff specialist, and the legislature created a position, and they went into recruitment. And I applied for it. I applied for a transfer. There were a number of other people interested, too, so I had to compete for it. And fortunately for me, I won that competition.
It's great. It's been a lot of fun, I'll bet.
It's been tons of fun. It's probably the best job in the Department of Natural Resources from my perspective.
Well, you know, we had, 25 elk, I think, brought into Wisconsin from Michigan. That was in, 95, wasn't it?
Correct.
And that was
May of 1995.
Tell us that story. Give us the history of that.
Well, it actually started a little bit earlier than that. Back in 1989, there was a directive in the biennium budget. It was put in there by Senator Joseph Stroll, that directed the department to do a feasibility study to see if it was feasible to restore woodland caribou, moose, and elk to Wisconsin. And in order to comply with that directive, part of that directive also said that if any of those species were feasible to restore, that the department would develop a management plan for that restoration. Well, we went through that process, and a review was made. It was not felt that it was feasible to restore woodland caribou or moose because they're very susceptible to a parasite called brainworm, which is indigenous in our white-tailed deer population. But it was decided that it was feasible to go forward with elk, which were less susceptible, and several other eastern states that have abundant deer populations had successfully restored elk. So it was felt feasible. A management plan was developed to have a release in the Bayfield Peninsula in northern Wisconsin. And a management plan was developed. It went out to public review. And the public, in particular in the Bayfield area, were not that happy with that proposal. And they were able to convince their county board of supervisors to pass a resolution in opposition to that. When the plan went before the Natural Resources Board, Natural Resources Board responded, and that proposal was not approved by the Natural Resources Board. Well, behind the scene, and where Joseph Stroll was influenced to take the route that he had taken, there were some people, notably Dr. Ray Anderson from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. This was basically his brainchild, and with the help of folks like Martin Hansen and Dr. Oren Rongston from the University of Wisconsin, Madison, they got together and they were able to convince a proponent down in Madison, who happened to be Governor Tommy Thompson, that this was still a good idea. Both Dr. Rongstad and Dr. Anderson had done a great deal of work on deer and bear, respectively, in the Clam Lake area. They had a lot of contacts with the local folks up there. They met with the U.S. Forest Service, who managed the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest that's in that area. And they convinced the local folks there that an elk study to see if it was feasible would be a good idea. And they convinced Governor Thompson, who, through contacts through him, was able to make arrangements with the good people of the state of Michigan to donate to the good people of the state of Wisconsin 25 elk for this restoration study. And that's how it was couched at that time, is that this was a study to see if it was feasible to restore elk. And 25 elk were captured in the winter of 1994-1995, held in quarantine and health tested to make sure we weren't bringing any ungulate diseases to Wisconsin. And after passing all those health tests, after a 90-day quarantine, they were brought and placed in an acclimation pen south of Clam Lake on the National Forest and held for 2 weeks. They arrived on May 3rd, 1995, and they were released to the wilds of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, Great Divide District, on the 17th of May, 1995. From those 25 elk, over the last 17 and a half years, that population has grown to 170 elk at the present time.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool story. Has it gone as you hoped it would go? I mean, is it, or not only you, but others?
Well, being a biologist, I'm hesitant to predict how things were going. I guess my job has been to learn from the elk themselves to help us better manage them. Some people's expectations were that they would grow like white-tailed deer. That's without the understanding that elk have less than half of the reproductive potential of white-tailed deer. Elk almost never have twins, and where deer become sexually mature at a year and a half, elk don't become sexually mature until they're 2.5 years old. So a herd of elk are going to grow much slower than a herd of deer will. So some people, because of our long history with managing white-tailed deer, thought they'd grow like deer, but they don't.
And there's some, well, I actually have an email from Frederick, Wisconsin. There's research indicating that the presence of wolves may reduce the herd, the elk herd. Perhaps having a wolf season will help that situation. You know, what do you think?
Well, certainly, you know, in wolf management ties in, and certainly some of the challenges that we've had with growing this elk herd has been complicated with the fact that wolves were here first before the elk arrived, and that because of abundant deer populations in the late 1990s, the wolf population grew quite a bit. And so they had a fair head start in front of the elk. And when you're trying to restore a prey species, it's certainly challenging to have an abundant predator population out there at the same time. So that has been an issue. Certainly the best way to handle that is through high-quality habitat. When the elk arrived here in 1995, certainly habitat was abundant on the Great Divide District of the National Forest. At that time, the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest was renowned nationwide as the hardest-working national forest in the nation, meaning that they had an aggressive timber harvest program. And because of politics and challenges in court on their management, some of that has been stymied, and there's less timber harvest that occurs on the national forest than there was from 1995 to 2000, when we saw our highest rates of growth with the elk herd. at that same time, with the abundant deer population and the growth of the wolf population, you know, where we didn't have a lot of issues with wolf predation.
Now we kind of do. We'll talk some more about that. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with our guest, Lane Stoll. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We have a lot of magnificent animals that call Wisconsin home, and elk are certainly among the most impressive. But wasn't that long ago you couldn't see them here. Thanks to some good planning and committed staff members, the DNR successfully reintroduced them just a couple of decades ago. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we talk about our Wisconsin elk herd with Lane Stoll, an elk biologist with the DNR Service Center in Hayward. And Lane, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
We were talking, you know, about wolves. An emailer from Frederick, Wisconsin, wondered about the presence of wolves and what impact they had when those 25 elk were introduced. Now we have, what did you say, 154 or thereabouts?
Well, there's 170 now.
170 now. But certainly wolves are going to take in elk if they have an opportunity to do so.
Right. Certainly, you know, like I mentioned, the wolves were here before the elk arrived, although not near at the numbers that they are right now. And, however, it took a long time for those wolves to figure out how to take down anywhere from 500 to 900-pound elk. And we had, after four years after the release, we did have three calves that were taken at about several months of age. By that time, they're already around 200 pounds in size, so an efficient prey species for a pack animal like wolves. However, those wolves didn't learn how to take down an adult elk until about 2002 when they started, and they really didn't get efficient at it until around 2004, 2005. During that period of time, we did see up through 2003, our annual growth rate was at about 21% a year. Since then, it's gone down to around 7%. Part of that's due to the wolves, but their impacts have been influenced by a reduction in the amount of quality habitat. What we've found through our radio telemetry with the elk, and we have strived to have at least 50% of the herd radio collared during the last 17 and a half years. And from that information that we've gathered, what we've found is that elk really like to use aspen clear-cut areas. And this corresponds with what's been found by Michigan elk in the Lower Peninsula with that population. So that's a very important forage habitat type that the elk select for. They select for it about twice its availability on the landscape. And that habitat has diminished a great deal on the elk activity range that we've had, and that's one of the reasons why we're looking to make some changes to our elk management plan. You know, things like supplemental increases, but a big part of that is we'd like to expand the elk range 508 square miles south of the existing elk range, which would include large blocks of county and state forest and private industrial forest, where there is aggressive aspen management currently occurring and is likely to occur in the long term. So
that's kind of the Black River Falls area?
Well, no, this is actually an area adjoining the existing Clam Lake Elk Range,
okay.
Which includes large blocks of abundant aspen habitat.
Okay.
But again, the Black River Falls area, that was a management plan that was approved by the Natural Resources Board in 2001 and has kind of languished because of lack of being able to find a suitable source herd to draw from. And because of recent activities by Missouri and Virginia and their restoration projects, there's an opportunity where we might be able to get elk like they from Kentucky. So that's why there's also a supplemental increase clause in the recent proposals that we've taken to the Natural Resources Board and which has been approved by the board. We'd like to bring in a minimum of 275 additional elk to Wisconsin from Kentucky We're at the very beginning stages of working with Kentucky on that. You know, it was all dependent upon, you know, this decision of the Natural Resources Board. So,
boy, you know,
we're currently working on that.
When I think about elk, Kentucky is not the first place that comes to mind.
What Kentucky did is, and, you know, we started in 1995, and Kentucky decided they wanted to also restore elk to their state. And they took a very aggressive approach. They went to several states in the West and made arrangements to get elk from those several different sources. And from 1998 to 2001, they brought 1,549 elk to their state.
Wow.
And released them. And they established an elk range of about 16 counties in size and had 8 release sites. The area of the state where they did this restoration was in the Appalachians, where there was extensive coal mining occurring, and where they were placing these elk were on mountaintops that were restored coal mines. And the elk did quite well in those areas, and their goal was to be at 10,000 elk by 2020, and they reached their goal in 2009 from that aggressive program that they had. And now, like I said, some surrounding states, Kentucky, Virginia, and Missouri, also wanted to start elk restoration programs, and they've been able to get some of those wild elk from Kentucky, which has a very healthy and disease-free population. They've done extensive health surveys of their elk herd and have found that they're clean of all those dangerous ungulate diseases that would worry livestock
here,
owners and managers of wild deer populations.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had some public input. Now, what's been our response here in Wisconsin for it?
Well, this proposal that we've submitted to the Natural Resources Board a while back, a couple weeks ago, includes this supplemental increase of a minimum of 275 elk. 200 would go to the Klam Lake Elk Range, and 75 would go to the Jackson County Elk Project. Another one would include assisted dispersal. What we've learned from radio collaring the elk over the last 17 years is that these elk do not move around on an eastern landscape. They stay put. And so we need to do something like Kentucky, where we have multiple release sites rather than just the one that we started with in 1995. Also, we wanted to, like I said, to expand the range 508 square miles to include a high-quality elk habitat south of the existing elk range, which has been found to be suitable. We've also have been developing working relationships with our tribal partners, both the Ojibwa tribes and then also the Ho-Chunk Nation. The plan also includes some predator management aspects, but most of that relates around the need for having extensive high-quality forage for them. And so we've taken that plan to the Natural Resources Board and got its approval, and we hope to go forward with, like I said, bringing in those increased numbers. And one thing that also supported this was there's been some research that was recently completed by the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point that's looked at the genetics of our herd and with our parent herd in Michigan. And because of our slower growth rate right now, that we're at risk of losing some of our existing genetic diversity.
Ah, that's not a good thing.
Which would also influence that growth rate. So getting these new animals and from a variety of different sources, Kentucky probably has one of the most genetically diverse populations in the East. And so it would be, again, a good source herd from that respect, too. So by infusing that new blood and those additional animals, we hope to give a good jump start to our existing herd and then also to start out right with an adequate number of animals for the Jackson County population.
Yeah. Lane Stoll, our guest today, elk biologist with the DNR. Have some open lines. We can get you on pretty quickly. We're going to go to Ann next, but you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show or email us at talk@WPR.org. And now let's turn to Ann. Ann, thank you for calling. Hi.
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Well, I had a question. What is the overall aim of restoration of elk in Wisconsin? I assume if it's on any list at all now, it's on the state endangered species list. And I know a lot of people were rather concerned because way back in 1980, when the restoration of the wolf, I know it wasn't brought here, but, you know, the effort to increase the wolf numbers in Wisconsin was started, it took about 30 years for wolves to reach anything approaching health. And it looked as if the end goal at that point was for hunters to be able to shoot these animals until they were pretty much decimated because they caused so many problems, you know, with hoofed animals. And it might be good for people, you know, children can see these beautiful animals. I know they eat a lot, so they must, you know, I just wonder whether DNR and the state of Wisconsin has an ecological plan that considers the state as a whole, not species, you know, one species at a time. It seems that that's needed because, you know, you get to a certain point and then everybody gets irate and says they're eating too much, let's get rid of them, and the hunters get their guns out. And, you know, it just seems like 30 years of wasted effort to me. And besides being a little cruel to the, you know, if you're not a hunter, being, if I were an elk, I don't think I would approve of this.
Okay. All right, Ann, I thank you very much for calling. And Lane, I'm sure you've heard comments like this.
Well, I appreciate her perspective. Certainly, hunting was a management aspect of restoration of elk from the beginning. Certainly, you know, many other species have been restored here in Wisconsin. That had been extirpated, like the elk, including species like the wild turkey, trumpeter swans, goshawks, peregrine falcons, and a wide variety of species. Fishers, and some of them, like the fisher and the wild turkey, which are recognized fur bearers and game animals, certainly. It was intended in our preliminary management plans that we developed that if those populations did increase to high enough levels that there would be hunting allowed. So, you know, hunting is recognized by the Department of Natural Resources as part of Wisconsin's heritage. And certainly a lot of the conservation support that we receive for management of wildlife in Wisconsin comes from hunter license dollars. So, And certainly that is a component with the elk management program, that once we reach harvestable numbers, that there would be a hunting season, and that there are provisions in the statute that $7 of every application fee that is sold, every $10 application fee, $7 of that will go towards elk management. So that our efforts are basically self-supporting by the elk themselves. Our goal for the elk population in the recent approved elk management plan amendment for the Clam Lake herd would be a population goal of 1,400 elk in that 1,600 square mile area. Certainly from a ecological perspective, the number is limited at slightly less than one elk per square mile of elk range to preserve and protect that habitat from the elk. And you know, certainly that's also the case for the Black River Falls. That elk range is about 320 square miles, and the population goal there is 390 elk. So once we reach our population goals, we will be managing those numbers to maintain those populations at those levels. So we will be, we will be harvesting, once we reach those management goals, we'll be harvesting antlerless elk, cow elk, to basically keep those populations at those levels to provide protection to the environment so there's not too much forage pressure on the range, and to provide recreational activity, both consumptive and non-consumptive of elk. Certainly we've seen in the last 17 years a great deal of interest by tourists coming up there to see and hear elk, especially during the rut when the bulls are bugling. And hundreds if not thousands of people are visiting the Clam Lake area right now to see the elk and to hear them.
So it's not necessarily, to Ann's point, the elk were reintroduced with the idea that, sure, there probably is going to be a hunting season if it's successful, but that wasn't the only reason for bringing elk into the state.
Not at all. The primary reason was to create restore a sustainable population of elk for a broad variety of users and for people not only to hunt them, but also for other folks who just want to go out and appreciate the elk.
They're beautiful.
The elk can hear them.
Yeah, they're beautiful animals to see in the wild, for sure. And Judith, our producer, has seen them in the Clam Lake area. She's one of the lucky people who has had a chance to see them. I have not seen them in the Clam Lake area, but I have seen them in Canada, in Saskatchewan, and quite often, as a matter of fact. And they're just a graceful, they're just a wonderful animal to see in the wild.
They certainly are. They're a magnificent animal.
Yeah.
And second largest ungulate in North America, second only to the moose.
Yeah, I'm really, they're really striking animals to see. And I don't know why I haven't been over, or I've been in that area, just haven't been lucky enough to see them. But I'm hoping I can always. Do we have any citizen groups, or wondering how citizens can support elk conservation work here in the state? How is it done now?
You bet. Well, we get a great deal of support from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. They have 26 chapters across the state, and they've been very supportive. Much of the original research effort was supported by funding from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Close to $500,000 came from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation those first 4 years. And, certainly for my monitoring effort with the radio collars, we receive grants from them upwards to around $20,000 to $40,000 a year, depending on what management activities we've got going on that they provide on an annual basis. And certainly, we've also used a lot of the sweat equity from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. We have close to 200 citizens, both Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and other private citizens, who come up and help us each year radio collar elk calves. And so we go out with our search crews and find the elk calves, put a radio collar on them, and that helps us monitor the survival rates of that particular age group of elk. We also have a few other activities each year through the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation that they sponsor. We have bugle days when a number of people come up, anywhere from 50 to 100 people come up during the peak of the rut and experience the bugling of the elk. Other partners include the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission that work with us a great deal, both in our elk trapping effort each winter, where we put radio collars on the adults. And, the U.S. Forest Service has worked with us on our management proposals and, work on the National Forest focused on elk management on the elk activity range. And, certainly a lot of private citizens, as I mentioned earlier, come up each September to visit the elk range to hear the bulls bugle and get a chance to possibly see the elk.
Laura in Elm Grove had a question for you. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Mary. Nice to see you, meet you.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a hunter. I don't come from a hunting family. So my question is, do you have a problem when you're growing the herd with poaching?
Oh, that's
like people during the regular, you know, deer hunting season. Do you have a problem with maybe even just confusion that might be? Oh, look, it's
somebody
a big
accidentally.
Buck.
Yeah, good question.
Well, not a great deal of problems. Certainly, some states have had more issues with poaching than we have. We've had 3 documented cases over the last 17 years of elk accidentally being shot by hunters during the hunting season. In all 3 of those cases, the hunters turned themselves in themselves, and so we're very cooperative. We have not had, we've had a couple of documented cases where there had been poaching, but it's not been a severe or significant problem at the present time. One thing that we did 5-6 years ago is when we were trapping the elk, some of the private citizens up there who live in the Clam Lake area mentioned that they were concerned about the invisibility of the elk. They're hard to see at night and during early morning and late evenings, and that's when we were seeing some issues with vehicle collisions. And so one of the management activities we did was to put in a warning system that was activated by the radio collars. Since then, we've turned that system on full time, so it's no longer activated by the animals' collars. But what we also did at the suggestion of those citizens was we put reflective blaze orange coloration on some strips on their radio collars that make them more visible at night in the headlights. Well, it also makes them more visible to hunters, and so the hunters see that blaze orange and they know that that's a radio collared elk, and
they can't shoot it. And you know what? We're out of time, Lane. I hope we can have you back and do this again. I really appreciated you taking the time to be with us today. Lane Stoll, elk biologist with the DNR. We'll have him back and we'll talk more about our elk herd.